Well, I regret to inform you that Jordan is no longer with the man that she married. The guy she married had less hair, more energy, was in better shape, and drove a Mustang. He played guitar, he always had fresh breath, and he actually looked good in medium-sized shirts. Jordan's no longer married to that guy. Likewise, I'm no longer married to the woman that I married. The woman that I married had bleached blonde hair. The woman that I married was a middle school teacher. The woman that I married had a nose ring. And it was one of those, it wasn't one of the bull-like ones that are in the front, not that there's anything wrong with that, but it was one of those cute studs that just sits on the side, and I really liked that. You know, those are actually biblical. In Ezekiel chapter 16, girls, you can thank me for this. Ezekiel chapter 16 in verse 11, when God is talking about his relationship with Israel as he takes Israel to himself as a wife and as a bride, and as he clothes her and adorns her with all of these jewels and all of these nice clothes, he puts a ring in her ear and a ring in her nose. And so nose rings are biblical. Different time, different place, different culture. But we're no longer married to the people that we were married, at least not when we consider these sort of superficial or circumstantial things, these things that change, these things that fade. I think of what Proverbs says in Proverbs chapter 31 and in verse 30. Proverbs chapter 31 and in verse 30 it says, "Charm is deceitful and beauty is vain, but a woman who fears the Lord is to be praised." There are lots of things that about my life that have changed, lots of things about my circumstances, who I am, on a superficial level that have changed, lots of things about Jordan that have changed. But there are some things that have stayed the same. Who here is exactly the same person that they were in high school or college? Okay, good. There's some people, there's some guys, they get to be like 40, right? 41, 42. And they're still wearing their Letterman jacket. They're still talking about the glory days. They're still talking like they are the greatest quarterback on the face of the earth, even though they haven't been able to throw a pigskin for 20-something years now. You know, we don't want to be that guy. Hopefully we are not the same people that we were back then. I say all that to begin because I want us to think about, what are we really looking for in another person? What are we really looking for in the people that we surround ourselves with, the friendships that we participate in, the types of people that we join ourselves together with? Just somebody that has a certain way about them, a certain look, somebody that's involved in certain activities, somebody that does certain things or has certain talents, is that what we are looking for in somebody? Or are we looking for something deeper, something more lasting, something more abiding? And again, as Proverbs chapter 31 and verse 30 suggests, we need to be looking for a type of person that fears the Lord, a person who honors God, a person who sees himself living before God and orders their life accordingly. Ultimately, that is what we should be looking for. And so that's what we're going to talk about a little bit this morning. We are pivoting this morning because we would typically be looking at our series on the kingdom parables that we've been looking at for the past couple months in Matthew chapter 13. But I received a question on Tuesday if I could do a lesson on dating, and in particular, who to look for, what type of person that we should be concerning ourselves with as we look for somebody to enjoy life with and ultimately somebody to marry. That's where that road ends. And so what sorts of things, what sorts of people should we be looking for and involving ourselves with in that sort of scenario? And so what I want to do is kind of begin something of a loose series. And I say loose because it's going to be occasional from time to time, not necessarily monthly like our other series are, but I want to begin a series on God-centered relationships. And so we'll talk about dating. We'll talk about friendships. We'll talk about marriage. We'll talk about other sorts of relationships that we have and how we can interact in that relationship in a way that puts God first, in a way that brings honor and glory to Him. We must understand that a God-centered relationship is going to begin with a God-centered search. That this doesn't just happen haphazardly. That we just don't fall into a circumstance, into a relationship where we are now just kind of wake up one morning and we decide, well, today is the day that we are going to serve God. That's usually not how it happens. Rather, a God-centered relationship begins when ideally both parties, but sometimes it begins with one party saying, I am going to seek God in this relationship. I am going to make sure that God is the center of this relationship. And in those rare cases where it is just one person who is the impetus for that, the other person in unique circumstances does come around and does put God at the center of their relationship as well. But it begins with a God-centered search. I'm looking for someone who is going to be the type of person, like Proverbs 31 and verse 30 describes, as someone who fears the Lord, someone who praises God, someone who honors God with their life. That is what I'm looking for in a companion, in a friend, in someone to date, ultimately in someone to marry. And so that's what we're going to be talking about this morning. This God-centered search, what sorts of things we're looking for, what sort of person we are trying to find. As we talk about this, I just want to pose a couple of questions. First of all, who here is married to their high school sweetheart? There's a couple of you. 4, 5, 6. And I would suggest to you that's rather exceptional. And young people, take note of that fact. That really doesn't happen all that often. And kudos for you who have made that work and who are still going strong in those relationships. But the fact of the matter is, that's usually not how it works. That's not how things pan out. And so I don't say that to discourage you, young people, as you find yourselves starting to get into relationships and interrelationships with people that you are currently going to school with. But just to say that I had two people that I had serious relationships throughout kind of my high school career. Neither of those are who I'm married to today. And that seems to be more of the way that that tends to work. Another question for us as we begin. Who here is married to somebody who was not a born-again New Testament Christian? Again, we've got a few of those here. But I might suggest that that is rather exceptional. And I would say that as we're thinking about this, I think about Apollos. There, at the end of Acts chapter 18, he's someone who feared God, who's described as a God-fearing man, somebody who searched the scriptures, somebody who is diligent to want to serve God and just needed to be taught a little bit more accurately. He's the type of person, though he didn't have all the answers, though he didn't have everything right, he's the type of person who, when confronted with the truth, believed and did what was necessary. So too, those people who are described just a few verses later in Acts chapter 19. Acts chapter 19, have you ever noticed that? The people that Paul comes in contact with, Luke describes them as disciples. People who are trying to follow Jesus even before they have made what we typically look at as that final step of baptism, which of course we know that's just, that's one more step on a road to a faithful life with God. But they are described as disciples. And so we've got some Apollos's here in this audience. We've got some people who fear God and who did so before they learned more accurately the way of truth. And so that can happen. That does happen. But again, it is rather exceptional. And I think what we should be looking for in those situations, again, is the type of person that Proverbs 31 in verse 30 describes, someone who fears God, someone who fears the Lord, someone who is trying to the best of their knowledge, to the best of their ability, to serve Him. And so, while I would not be so strong in saying that we can never have relationships, never have friendships, never have camaraderie with someone who is not a born-again New Testament Christian, as the Bible describes, we should at least be looking for those types of people that, when confronted with the truth and considered honestly, will bring themselves under submission to that truth. And again, we've got several Apollos here in the audience this morning. All of that said, let's begin. I actually want us, we're not going to stay here in Proverbs 31. Proverbs 31, as you know, it is a text written to a young man, or at least the words of a mother to her son that are recorded for us here in Proverbs 31, counseling a young man about the type of woman that he should be seeking out, a type of woman that he should desire to find and to be in a relationship with. She is a woman who primarily is a blessing to other people because of her ingenuity, because of her charity, because of her diligence. And so this is kind of the stock text that we would turn to when we think about trying to find a significant other, or a companionship, or as we start the dating process, this is where we would want to turn typically in looking at what this advice the mother gives to her son. But I want us to turn to another text that maybe you've considered, maybe you haven't, but I think also gives us a paradigm, gives us some things to look for as far as somebody who is going to be this type of person who wants to serve God, who tries to serve God in all that they do. We're talking about Job chapter 31. Job chapter 31. Now, this is a text that has been brought to my attention recently by a couple of sources. One of those was Chris Emerson, as this idea was brought to him. The Job 31 is, in, at least in some ways, kind of a, it could be treated as a companion text to Proverbs 31. If Proverbs chapter 31 tells the young man what type of woman to look for, Job 31, at least in some way we could look at it as what type of man should be sought after in this God-centered search. Now, Job 31, we need to put this in its context and do give respect to the context. We know the story of Job. It begins in, with Satan coming before God and asking God, does Job serve you for nothing? Why is Job righteous? He's righteous, ultimately, Satan claims, because you have blessed him, because you've given him such great profit and given him such great prosperity in his life. Take all of that away and see how Job reacts. See what he does. He's not going to continue to serve you. His righteousness is only for the sake of gain. And so the book is not really answering the question of why do we suffer, but why are we righteous? And so the conversation then, as Job's three friends are trying to understand what's going on, and as Job responds to them about his situation, it's working out this question of what has happened to Job, and how we view God, how we view the world around us, all of these questions are being answered. And that is part of where Job 31 fits. Job is making his final appeal to his righteousness, the fact that he has not acted in some sort of wicked way for God to punish him, but that he is indeed a righteous man. Having said that, Job is later rebuked for his self-righteousness, for his arrogance, for his pride, for his willingness to challenge God. So Job is not a perfect man by any means, but at least according to the picture that he paints here in verse 31, he is a righteous man in that sense, even if he does have some tendencies to arrogance and self-righteousness. And so again, I think even though Job is not perfect, he does give us a paradigm here of what sorts of things we should be looking for. And so if you will begin reading with me, Job chapter 31, and in verse 1 it says, I have made a covenant with my eyes. How then could I gaze at a virgin? What would be my portion from God above? And my heritage from the Almighty on high? Is not calamity for the unrighteous? In disasters for the workers of iniquity? Does not he see my ways and number all my steps? If I have walked with falsehood, and my foot has hastened to deceit, let me be weighed in a just balance, and let God know my integrity. If my step has turned aside from the way, and my heart has gone after my eyes, and if any spot has stuck to my hands, then let me sow and another eat. Let what grows for me be rooted out. As we look at these first four verses, or first eight verses rather, in Job 31, there's a couple of overarching principles that I see at work here in the life of Job. Number one, he is someone who sees himself before God. He sees himself as accountable before God. Did you notice that? He looks in verse 2, he says, if I was to do this thing, what would my portion be from God? What would my heritage be from the Almighty on high? Verse 4, does he not see all my ways and number all my steps? Is the person that we're looking to be engaged with, is the person that we're looking to begin a relationship with, do they see themselves? Do they see themselves as accountable before God? Do they live life knowing that God is watching and knowing that God is concerned, that God cares about what they're doing? Are they living their life in a way that tries to please them, again, to the best of their ability, to the best of their knowledge? Is that how they are conducting themselves in life? Or are they following after their own passions, their own wills, their whims, their desires? Are they just doing what they do to please themselves? Or do they order their life in such a way that demonstrates that they know that they are under the eye and under the hand of God? And secondly, along with that, not only do they see themselves as accountable before God, but are they a person of integrity? Do they have integrity? Notice what he says here. First of all, verse 1, I have made a covenant with my eyes. How then could I gaze at a virgin? This is someone who has a commitment to purity, a commitment to righteousness, such that they have made a covenant, they've made an agreement with themselves that they're not going to look at anything that is not fit for them to be looking at. And you'll notice also verse 7, he says, if my step has turned aside from the way, my heart has gone after my eyes, if any spot has stuck to my hands, then let me sow and another eat, and let what grows for me be rooted out. Is this a person of integrity? Do they strive to do what is right in all and every circumstance? What do they do with their feet? Where do they take themselves? Where do they go? Where do they spend their time? Are they able to control their lusts? Are they able to control the things that they see, the things that they want, the things that they find appealing, the things that enter into their eyes? Are they able then to take that thought that comes to them and then say, I'm not going to dwell on that, I'm not going to think on that, I am going to redirect my thoughts, redirect my heart so that my hands do something else? Into verse 7, he says, if any spot is stuck to my hands, that if my hands are unclean, if I have not been a person of integrity, if it can be seen in me that I have done things that I ought not do. This is someone who has a commitment to integrity. And these two things, accountability before God and a commitment to integrity, these two things I would suggest to you this morning, these are the things we need to be looking for with our companions, with our friends, but also those people that we would want to date. Here's another question that I meant to ask as we began. Who here was thinking about these things at 15? I wasn't. Who here was thinking at 15 that the person that I'm wanting to take to the movies or wherever, you know, to dinner, that I'm going to be married to this person someday? Anybody thinking that? Actually, I was thinking that because I was the guy that could clobber you on the rugby field and then go watch Walk to Remember or mind's blanking. What is that movie by it's got the good-looking guy, Ryan Gosling. Notebook. Yeah, I was the guy that could watch those movies by myself at home and maybe shed a tear or two. I wasn't a flat character in that way. And so I was thinking about marriage at that point. But 15 or 16, we're not really thinking about these things. At least I wasn't necessarily thinking about the sorts of things I should have been thinking about at that point. But are we looking for somebody that has, that sees themselves before God, somebody of integrity? Now, I'm not sure what Jordan saw in me. She must have had something of a sanctifying vision for how she saw me. She saw me not who I was, but rather who I could be. But I know what I saw in her when I looked at her, a person of accountability, a person of integrity. I saw in her someone who regularly studied her Bible with other women on a weekly basis. I saw in her somebody who had a desire to help, somebody who served other people and desired particularly to serve young people. That's who I saw in Jordan. Somebody of accountability, somebody of integrity. Are we looking for those things? And the people that we meet and the companions that we surround ourselves with and the ones that we would look to date, or are we looking for those circumstantial and superficial things? The rest of the text, I think, goes on to fill out kind of this understanding of someone who is accountable before God and someone who is a person of integrity. Notice verse 9, it says, if my heart has been enticed towards a woman, and if I have lain in wait at my neighbor's door, then let my wife grind for another and let others bow down on her. For that would be a heinous crime. That would be an iniquity to be punished by the judges. For that would be a fire that consumes as far as Abaddon, and it would burn to the root all my increase. Joseph says, I'm someone who has been faithful in my relationships. I am someone who has a commitment to purity. And that's something that especially on the world in which we live and the looseness with which we approach sexuality and sexual relationships, that is something that we need to be looking for in somebody else. Are they a person who has a commitment to purity? Is that part of what makes them a person of integrity? I go back to verse 1 and this idea that he's made a covenant with his eyes. Again, this is somebody who has clear boundaries set up. And so young people, as you're out on a date or as you're out with your friends and you're hanging out, are you, do you have a commitment to say that I'm never, you know, I don't care if it's 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 20 minutes, I'm never going to be alone with a person of the opposite sex in the car? Because I know where that can lead, because I know, especially if I have a deep care and concern for this person, and an intimate desire to be with this person, I know where that can lead, where that can go. And so I've set up these boundaries. I am that committed to purity that even if the world thinks it's silly, even if the world thinks it doesn't make sense, I've got a boundary here because I've got a commitment to purity. Is that what you're looking for in another person? to have those sorts of boundaries with you, to treat you in this way, to be faithful in their relationship to you? Are they somebody, have you noticed this when you're with them, are they somebody who's always looking at somebody else? Somebody whose eyes are drawn to everything that goes on around them, and how easy is that for us, again, in today's day and age where we've got a really low standard on what sorts of things we should be wearing and what sorts of things we should be covering. Is the person you're with, are they somebody who has a commitment to purity such that they are clothing themselves in a way that says, I respect you and I care about you enough that I don't want to do anything to cause your eye to wander in a way that it ought not. But also, are we looking for people who have made covenants with their eyes, who've set up these boundaries so that they do not transgress their commitment to purity? Is that something that we are looking for? Again, verse 13 beginning, it says, if I have rejected the cause of my manservant or my maidservant when they have brought a complaint against me, what then shall I do when God rises up? When he makes inquiry, what shall I answer him? Did not he who made me in the womb make him? And did not one fashion us in the womb? Verse 16, if I have withheld anything that the poor desire, or have caused the eyes of the widow to fail, or have eaten my morsel alone, and the fatherless have not eaten of it. For from my youth the fatherless grew up with me as with a father, and from my mother's womb I guided the widow. If I have seen anyone perish for lack of clothing or needy without covering, if his body has not blessed me, and if he was not warmed with the fleece of my sheep, if I have raised my hand against the fatherless because I saw my help in the gate, then let my shoulder blade fall from my shoulder and let my arm be broken from its socket. For I was in terror of calamity from God, and I could not have faced his majesty. The second thing that I think fills out this picture of integrity and accountability before God is this idea of equity. Do they treat others with fairness? They treat others with justice. Do they treat others as themselves, as the golden rule goes? Do they look at people of all walks of life the same way? I really appreciate what he says there in verse 15. The same God who created me created them. As I'm looking for somebody else to be involved with, are they somebody who treats others fairly? Are they somebody who treats maybe people who would be of a different social class or different social status? Do they treat them the same way? Or are they someone who looks at every person, regardless of their color, regardless of their background, regardless of where they grew up or who their parents are, how much money they make? Do they look at them with kindness and charity? And maybe a way that we can gauge that is, what is their interaction like with the person that nobody spends time with? What is their interaction like with the weird kid, with the new kid? How do they treat them? Are they kind to them? Are they nice to them? Or do they join with everybody else in laughing at them because they don't want to face embarrassment by being different and being kind to that person who might seem odd to everybody else? How do they treat that type of person? Are they a person of equity, a person of charity? Do they help other people when they can? Do they see a need and try to help in whatever capacity that they might have? Or are they somebody who is so focused on themselves, so focused on building up their own status, their own popularity, their own reputation, their own power, that they ignore those who are most in need? Are they a person of equity? Moving on, then, to verse 16. Kelly, can you try clicking for me? Moving on, then, to verse 24, it says, If I have made gold my trust or called fine gold my confidence, if I have rejoiced because of my wealth, because my wealth was abundant, or because my hand found much, if I have looked at the sun when it shone, or the moon moving in splendor, and my heart has secretly been enticed, and my mouth has kissed my hand, this also would be an iniquity to be punished by the judges, for I would have been false to God above. And what we're talking about here is fidelity. Are they a person? Are they a person who strives to be faithful to God in all that they do? Again, to the best of their ability, to the best of their knowledge. Do they put their trust in other things besides God? They put their trust in their popularity. They put their trust in their wealth and their possessions. They put their trust in their ability, who they are, what they have been able to accomplish. Or do they put their trust in God? Ultimately, what do they serve? Who do they serve? Again, are they being faithful to God? Are they a person of fidelity? Are they trying to serve God? Here in verse 26, he says, if I've looked at the sun when it shone, or the moon moving in splendor, and my heart has secretly been enticed, and my mouth has kissed it, kissed my hand. All of this is talking about this idea that, somebody might be given to worship other gods, other deities, other elements, other things. Is this someone who puts God first and foremost in their life? Are they a person of fidelity as it regards their relationship with God? Or is there something else that they are serving? Something else that is most important to them? Something else that they put their trust and their confidence in? How much time do they spend reading their Bible? Is prayer the first thing that they do in the morning? Is that something that they stress with you? That they want that to be part of their relationship, part of, y'all's relationship? That, we devote regular time to prayer and Bible study and serving other people? Are they someone who demonstrates in their life, in their actions, in their words, and in their deeds, that they are putting God above all else, that He is at center in their life? Or something else very obviously at center for them? Are they a person of fidelity? And then finally, I want to look at verse 33 and 34. Some other things that we could draw from this text, but verse 33 and 34, I think is very important. If I have concealed my transgressions at others as others do, by hiding my iniquity in my heart, because I stood in great fear of the multitude, and the contempt of families terrified me, so that I kept silence and did not go out of doors. Ultimately, Job says, I have been a person of sincerity. I have been a person of transparency. I have been a person who is genuine. Is that what we're looking for in another person? It is the person that we're involving ourselves with, the person that we've begun this blossoming relationship with. Is this somebody who is transparent? Is this somebody who is sincere? Is this someone who is genuine? Or is this someone who is just trying to put on a front? Somebody who is putting on a good face? Somebody that is not being genuine or trying to hide who they are? Are they very transparent about their struggles, the things that they, deal with on a regular basis? Or are they someone who tries to whitewash themselves, someone who tries to act as if they are perfect, act as if everything is okay? And maybe this comes out, maybe we can see some of this, if they're being insincere, ingenuous, maybe this comes out, you see them interacting in different circumstances, in different relationships, and they are different people. You notice they're different people when they're with their friends than with you. Or they're different people when they're around older people. Or they're different people in front of your parents than they are when they get in the back seat of the car with you. They put on a front, they put on a face. And to a degree, I think we all are conditioned by our circumstances, conditioned by the people we surround ourselves with. I know I get with a couple groups of my friends, and I lose a few years on my maturity. And that's going to happen, I think, just in various contexts. We are somewhat different. But are they two-faced? Are they someone who is a completely different person in different circumstances? Are they someone who has proven themselves to be ingenuous, insincere? And it doesn't matter how good-looking they are, how nice they are, how cute they are, what kind of car they drive, what sport they play, how well they can swing the ball. It doesn't matter any of that. If you can't trust this person, if you can't trust this person to always be genuine, to always be truthful, to always be sincere, never to try to hide who they really are, how do you think that's going to manifest itself later on in that relationship when now they've got something to hide from you and they're trying to cover it up? And so what sorts of things are we looking for? If we want a God-centered relationship, it starts with a God-centered search. And ultimately what we're looking for is a person who sees themselves as accountable before God, who is striving to the best of their ability, to the best of their knowledge, to please Him. A person who walks with integrity, who has a commitment to integrity, who strives for purity, who acts with equity. Who lives in fidelity before God and to God, who puts God at the center of their life rather than something else. Ultimately, a person who is genuine, a person who is sincere. Are we looking for this type of person? Or are we looking for something else? Are we captivated by her eyes? Are we enticed by his good looks? Not that those things aren't, or not that those things are bad in and of themselves, but again, realize that they are superficial, that they are circumstantial, that they change. Are we looking for the person, like Proverbs 31 in verse 30 says, a person who fears the Lord? What sort of person are we searching for? Are we searching for God-centered relationships? And again, this applies to our young people as you start dating. This applies to all of us as we engage in friendships. This applies to the widow who is looking for another spouse. This applies to those who maybe you are a little bit older in life. I never forget, Jordan was 24, and a 17-year-old girl told her she was past her prime, so she needed to go ahead and find someone to marry, and that's actually how our relationship started. But maybe you are later on in life, and you are looking for somebody. You looking for these things too? Who are we surrounding ourselves with? Are we looking for God-centered relationships? Is that what we're searching for? Well, maybe you're here this morning and your life, your old walk is not God-centered. You have been at the forefront of your life. Your passions, your desires, your wills, your want, what you think is best, that has been first and foremost. So no, you haven't bowed down to the sun or gone after the moon, but you put yourself as the idol and the God that you worship. Will you repent of that? Will you realize that God-centeredness, ultimately God-centeredness is the only way to live? And will you begin to put Him at center in your life? Will you begin that process by dying to self, by being baptized, by putting off the old self and living, being raised as new, Christ living in you, Christ-centered living? Will you begin that process this morning? Can we help you with that? If you're here this morning, you have any need, we can help you in any way. We'd ask you to come forward as we stand, as we sing.